keeping you in touch with Michigan and the world.
When I was young, it seemed that life was so wonderful, a miracle. Oh, it was beautiful.
All right, welcome back to it. We've been talking, you know, a little bit, a lot over the time about the impact that mass immigration has on, you know, your social structures, your schools, your hospitals, your, you know, the structure of everything is stressed when it gets beyond capacity. And it's difficult to overstate the impact that immigration is having on our nation's schools. Here to talk more about that, Genevieve Wood, who talks policy priorities with the Heritage Foundation. Genevieve, welcome back to the program.
Good morning, Steve.
You know, we talk a lot about immigration. We talk a lot about illegal immigration and border walls and so forth. But let's talk about practical application and the practical impact that mass immigration, whether from refugees or immigrants, legal and illegal, have on our school system. What kind of stress are you seeing?
Well, I mean, I think you're very right to point out that, you know, we often just focus on who's coming across the border, but we have to really also look at who's already here and what kind of impact is that having, and how should our laws perhaps be changed to address those impacts. And one of the ones that we recently reported about in the Daily Signal was the pressure that immigration, both legal and illegal, is having on our public school system. I mean, today in America, 1 in 4 children going to a public school comes from an immigrant household. Now, some of those are legal and some of those are illegal, but regardless, 1 in 4 are from an immigrant household. And you say, well, okay, that America's always been a home, you know, of immigrants. True, but when you really look at how these children are often where they are, they're concentrated in areas where in some school districts, you know, 85% of the school, if you look, for example, out Annandale, Virginia, I think 78% of the kids in a public school there are from immigrant households. Many of them, the majority of them, are not coming from homes that speak English. They're coming from certain countries.
So let me stop you right there, because this is important. Is there an intention to speak English?
Well, I don't think so. I mean, in some cases, you know, these are children that may, like I said, many of them are here legally, but they're coming from areas, maybe their parents perhaps came illegally, they were born here. If you're surrounded by people who don't speak English, there's no pressure on you to learn English. And this is the difference between immigration today and immigration years ago that people always refer back to, is that today, like I said, in these areas, they're so concentrated oftentimes that it's almost as though they've just brought a mini El Salvador with them or a mini Nicaragua with them.
Right. They've left their third world hellhole and come here to create a new third world hellhole. You know,
yeah, because they're not living in a diverse community. It's not like they're living in a community like, you know, you say back in the day in New York, the Irish had to live with the Italians, who had to live with the Germans. I mean, everybody was from different parts of Europe or different parts of the world and spoke different languages. So the one thing they could all do is learn English and become, and that way you had unity. In these cases, you're coming to some of these schools and all the kids are from El Salvador, or the vast majority.
Right.
So they're not assimilating even with other cultures that come to America. They're just bringing their own. And
I'm sure this would get a lot of screams from the left, but I appreciate it when they scream with comments. But Genevieve, what if we did a, you know, mandated that English, this has been discussed before, an English-speaking nation, just like Teddy Roosevelt said, you've got 5 years. Learn the language, get a job, contribute, or go home.
Well, I think that's something we ought to look at. I mean, again, as I said, you have to look at, okay, where as a country, we let in 1 million immigrants to this country every year legally.
That's right, million. Which is more than the rest of the world combined. Go on.
Combined. That's right. So when people ever say to America, oh, you know, you're harsh in your immigration, give me a break. We let in more people than anybody else. But so we have to look at this, okay, you know, what kind of impact is that having? And again, it's not about letting the people in. It's what happens when they get here. And if people are not assimilating into the culture, and a big part of that is language, if people aren't learning the language, you know, they're already coming here usually because they're looking for jobs, trying to get out of poverty, trying to get out of these hellholes you talked about in parts of Central America. If they're coming here and they're not learning English, chances are they're not going to get out of poverty, certainly not in one generation. They're not going to get better jobs. They may have a little bit better than what they had back in America,
and then they become a drain. They become a drain or a drag on the system. And of course, if we say that we should have an English-speaking nation, well, you're a bigot, you're a misogynist, you're xenophobic, pick your series of names and name calling, because that's what happens. If anybody disagrees with you on the left because you say, listen, we should just make it an English-only nation, because how many times do you go into to big cities now, and of course the street signs are changed to reflect the local ethnicity? I've never been in Mexico where I see English signs. And yet there's lots of Americans that go to Mexico, but I don't see signs in English down there. Am I missing something?
No, you're not missing anything, except that they don't have folks down there making the same crazy argument that some of the people here are making. And as we were talking about, Steve, this isn't just about, well, I'm trying to preserve the English language. This is also about trying to help the people who are actually coming here trying to better themselves. I mean, the reality is they want to get out of poverty, they want to live the American dream, then they need to become part of America, and part of America is speaking one language. And this is not just true of us. Every nation, every people has things that unifies them, has things that makes up their culture, and language is a big part of it. But I will also say, you know, there's other things you can look at. Senator Tom Cotton has looked at the fact that we shouldn't just be having this chain migration that allows people just to bring in, you know, aunts, uncles, grandfathers, and everybody else that relates to their family once they're here, that we ought to be looking at more diverse populations of bringing people in based on their skills, perhaps, not just based on how many family members they already have living in the U.S. I mean, changing that up would also change which countries people come from, or at least would change the percentages likely on that, and would be changing up how these communities are built up. Because what we're doing right now is building up many, as I said, you know, Nicaraguas and El Salvadors and what have you, in different parts of the country. And if people think this is just happening in Texas or California,
that's crazy. No, it's happening everywhere. And the fact of the matter is, if you go into a school, because it's not just the you mentioned El Salvador, it's not just that. But it's kids from the Middle East or South America or Central America. So you end up not with one or two languages, but four, five, six languages. So how do you manage that? Because nobody's talking to anybody. They're not getting on the same team. They've all got their own little, you know, clique, if you will, or whatever. They subdivide themselves. And that doesn't make us any stronger now, does it?
No, it doesn't. And the cost, I mean, there's two costs involved. One is the financial cost, which is in many of these cases, you've got to bring in all these extra teachers with different language backgrounds to teach it, because they don't make them learn English necessarily. It always kind of remains a second tier language. And number two, I mean, we see what's happened in parts of Europe, where especially when you look at people coming from many of the Middle Eastern countries, and they end up in, again, kind of, they only live with the folks who've come from that country in London or in Germany or wherever it happens to be, and they don't start embracing the larger culture or becoming part of it. Many of the young people in those communities get disenfranchised. They don't have jobs, and you see the kind of terrorist attacks in some cases they're committing. I'm not saying that exact same thing is going to happen here, but I know in Minnesota, for example, you have, you know, Somalian communities that come together and often end up living very close-knit communities and don't assimilate into the larger culture.
Right. They don't. They become insulated against everything around them.
That's right. And this isn't about saying to people, you got to come here, forget your language, forget every part of your culture. Nobody's saying that. That's one thing that makes America great. But you can't come here and just live in that and not adopt the larger American culture, which is what makes the country truly great.
Then I'll go back to what Teddy Roosevelt said. A hyphenated America is no America at all. Yeah, and a hyphenated American is no American at all. Again, learn the language, learn the culture, contribute, or go back to where you came from. Genevieve Wood, always a pleasure.
Thank you, sir.
Greatly appreciate Genevieve from the Heritage Foundation. It wasn't crazy when Teddy Roosevelt said it's not crazy now. 41 After on the Steve Gruber Show.